The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition for this week. So today's show's been long promised. It's kind of a lingering leftover show from Annuity Awareness Month last month. And one thing we had promised to go over that we didn't quite get to during the month of June is what are called living benefits on annuities. So like the name suggests, certain annuities have a death benefit, right, which is triggered by the death of the annuitant. But there are other benefits, some type of withdrawal or income benefit that are referred to kind of as a group as living benefits, because these are additional benefits beyond the act of annuitization that you can receive from these annuities without dying and receiving a death benefit. So there's a variety of these, and they are important for you to understand if you have an annuity that has such a feature or considering an annuity that has some type of living benefit feature. So we're going to do our best to try to educate you today on the EDU show about the various living benefits, how they work, what they do, what they don't do, things to watch out for, etc. So I'll invite Jim in, who's joining me remotely from, well, we're generally remote. It's a rare occurrence now that we're in the same physical location, but he's more remote than usual because he's not just 30, 40 miles south of me, remote. He's, I don't know, what, 1,000 miles southeast of me? Is that about how far Florida is from Colorado? 800
if
miles?
If I was in Florida, I'm in Massachusetts.
Oh, well, I guess it's not south. Southeast is mostly east then. So, yeah, what's the distance Colorado to Massachusetts?
Pretty far.
Oh, pretty far. Okay, we'll just go with that.
Well, we could kind of roundabout it. It's a 3.5-4 hour flight, and what do we do? Go 600 miles an hour? So,
yeah, well, not the whole way though. So we'll just for our own knowledge, we'll Google it. Colorado to Massachusetts is, oh my gosh, it's double what I said. 2,000 miles, not 1,000. Goodness. Yeah, that's a ways. That's why I don't drive it. It's way too far.
Yep, according to Google, my mom's house to my house, 2,040 miles.
Yep. You're right, a really long way.
Told you.
But the beauty of the internet is we're doing this as if you were just down the street. So.
Right. So I came to visit mom, folks, to help take care of her because my sister and mom, I have a really good deal what they did. I know a lot of you are worried as you age, and my mom was no different. My mom's now 86. But probably, gosh, I want to say 7 years ago now, could be a little bit more, but not more than 10. I would say probably seven or less. They bought a property in a town called Rochester. We grew up in New Bedford. Rochester is a very, very rural community, relatively speaking. It is Massachusetts, Southeast Mass, so rural, take it with a grain of salt. But it's relatively rural. But what is really cool, Chris, they bought one lot, a 2.5 acre lot, but the town let them build essentially two houses. They each have their own address, but the house is literally one house, a very long ranch style home with a garage between the two of them that it's connected. So my mom can walk out of her house into the garage. My sister can walk out of her house into the garage. The garage is a two-car garage that is shared. And they each get their own address. My mom is number 5. My sister is number 3. I won't say the road. But it is one property, one long ranch-style home, but two addresses. I thought that was pretty cool. I don't know how they got that, but they did. And mom likes it because, and my sister likes it, because even though they quote-unquote live together, folks, they truly do have separate homes, separate addresses, separate entrances, and that big garage buffer between the two homes so they can't hear each other. Not that my mom at 86 is partying late into the evening or late into the morning. And my sister kind of likes the privacy, if you will. Now, on the backside, they have an enclosed with screen porch that runs the whole length of the house, so they can each go out and walk across the porch to each other's apartment, to which my mom takes great advantage of. She doesn't have to go up and down garage stairs. She just walks out onto the back porch and walks to my sister's, bangs on the door, and goes and visits my sister. So anyways, my sister wanted to go on vacation. I did not want my mom staying alone. Mom did not want to be alone for a week, and that's why I'm here. So that's why I was not on the podcast last week, and I most likely won't be on the Q&A podcast this week. Staff will be filling in, because after this, I will be heading to Ohio, where I'm contemplating my own retirement someday into the future, and trying to spend a little bit more time out there to see if I will like it. So I do like, I mean, I don't have children, Chris, but I think if people who do have kids, this ability, it's much better than living in the child's basement that gets renovated into an in-law apartment, if you will. This is definitely far more private. But again, my mom feels very, very comfortable and secure as an 86-year-old retiree, knowing that her daughter is literally, I won't even say 30 seconds. If it took my sister 30 seconds to get to my mom's, she's dilly-dallying. Just seconds away, she could be at my mom's. We would prefer mom to still get one of those, I don't know what they're called, you know, little buttons you press if you fall. She refuses to do that. LifeLock, I think, not LifeLock. What's it called? You know, the I fall in and I can't get up commercial.
Everybody knows what you're talking about.
They wear a pendant.
Life Alert. Yeah.
We would prefer mom to get that. She refuses to.
You know, the nice thing about those, I believe, not that this is the topic for the show, but I'm pretty sure the modern version of those has fall detection, a real large risk for people as they age. There's an inordinate number of people that are otherwise healthy that you all who are aging into your 70s and 80s probably have noticed that your balance and sure-footedness has reduced over time, and oftentimes a perfectly healthy 80, 85-year-old ends up, you know, starting the rapid trajectory downward because of a fall and a blow to the head. And so, you know, falling is really a, you know, significant danger, I think, to people as they age, and taking precautions to obviously avoid the fall is best. But if it does happen, getting assistance as rapidly as possible,
now,
I think
we
is very
were to
important.
Buy, if we were to buy, Chris, you're more techie than I am, all listeners out there, an Apple Watch for her, the newer Apple Watches have that fall detection.
Yeah, I think they do.
Can
too.
Can it be said? I know Apple will call 911 automatically, but my sister would be there a hell of a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Can it contact a different Apple phone? If anybody knows the answer to that, please share it with me if you're an Apple geek. Mm-hmm. Because maybe my sister and I just buy her one and tell her she needs to wear it. And that, hey, you don't have to know how the watch works. Don't worry about pressing any buttons or anything like that. It's really going to be for fall detection. You refuse to get a life lock. She does have an Apple iPhone. So here's an Apple Watch, because I do worry about her falling. She shared with me on the trip out here. And I'm sharing this all with you folks because this has to do with retirement. You all have to take care of your parents as they age. Like, I'm taking care of my mom. You all know my dad passed last year, but I'm trying to take care of my mom. And we're all going to be my mom someday, or my dad someday, if we can live into our 80s. And in 25 years when I'm my mom's age, actually 26 years when I'm my mom's age, it will be different. I'm sure there'll be different tech than what my mom has available now. So that's kind of why I'm chatting about this a little. But wouldn't that be better even than LifeLock, Chris, if the Apple Watch could send my sister an alert? Because mom shared with me that she gets up every morning between 3 and 4 to go to the restroom. I didn't realize that. And that scares me, as, you know, it's early in the morning. But when she does, her dog, which she loves, and that dog gives her purpose and meaning, but I joke that it's a stupid dog. It's not. It's a very cute, lovable dog. But the dog gets off the bed when she does that. And for some bizarre reason, refuses to jump back on the bed, only puts the two front paws on, and my mom has to lift the dog up. It's the only time he does it. And she was sharing with me she's got to do it every morning. And I just worry, an 86-year-old, she's frail. Mom is not a strong woman. 86 years old, soon, someday be 87, 88, 89, having to pick a dog up, I feel she could lose her balance herself and fall.
And, you know, I think a lot of people think having a family member is better. I think that's worse, honestly, because the difference is when you have professional 24/7 monitoring, and this is not an advertisement for Life Alert, because I don't know exactly how they work, but I would imagine they should have 24/7 monitoring with people awake. What if it happens in the night when your sister's asleep? It didn't do you any good.
True. Good point. I did not think of that. Okay. So anyways, I'm at my mom's, and these are the things that run through my head. And I'm just sharing with you, because we run into this all the time with our clients who are taking care of their family members as well, their aging parents. But we all wonder, at least I do, and I'm sure 80% of you out there, we all realize that will be us someday. We're not getting younger, stronger, and healthier. And who's going to take care of us? Who's going to be our advocate? Not just for financial matters, which is where retirement firms such as the one I'm trying to create would come in handy, but also physically, who's going to take care of us? And as someone who doesn't have a wife, let alone children, I think it's even more difficult for me. My mom at least has my sister, who is a former RN, literally right here. And when my sister can't be here, I'm here. So anyways, these are things that we deal with at our firm, but these are things that we deal with in life as a whole. But anyways, if anybody has the answer to the Apple Watch, if it could be set to contact my sister, because the issue is, Chris, she refuses to get the Life Lock. Even if we bought it and paid for it, I don't think she'd wear the damn thing. But I feel she would, and I think honestly, and she doesn't listen to the podcast anymore, so I can say this, I think it makes her feel old. Even though 86 is old, she refuses to accept that. And LifeLock is for the lady who's fallen and can't get up. And she just, oh, it's terrible. She just, no, absolutely not, no. And I don't get it, because I wouldn't be that stubborn. I would get it in a heartbeat if I needed it. And someday I probably will have to get it, because I'll probably be alone. But she refuses to. She might wear the Apple Watch, Chris. That would be the only I would say.
The only tool that works is if you're willing to use it. So even if it's not perfect, anything would be, you know, better than not having it.
Right. Everything would be better than nothing. And if we give her the Apple Watch and just tell her, just wear it, and if you did fall, it's going to alert Jean, I think she would wear it. I truly do. Maybe. But LifeLock or Life Alert or whatever it's called, she... I. I've talked to her. My sister's talked to her. If anybody has a way to get their parent to do it, please share it with me because my mom refuses to. Okay. That's what I will be doing for the next several weeks, and we'll go from there. I will begin today. Today's show is one that's long been promised, but it's one that we need to do, even though we just finished National Nudity Awareness Month, I think 3 or 4 weeks ago. We got several questions, quite more than several, I would say probably six-ish, that have to do with living benefit riders. And without me explaining what a living benefit is, it will make answering the questions that much more time-consuming or difficult. Now I'll be able to say, as we talked about on the show that played on July, whatever day the show plays, we can just reference back to this show as part of the answer. Mm-hmm. So living benefit riders, Chris, if I was to say to our listeners, it is an attempt to keep a noun and not a verb. What am I talking about? If people are listening, they're like, what the hell, is this an English class? Well, if you listen to me talk long enough, you know, no, Jim does not master the English language. This isn't an English class. What the heck is he talking about?
Yeah, so when we talk about when we talk about it like that, with regards to an annuity, we refer to an annuity that has not yet had the action of annuitization applied to it. We refer to that, you know, pre-annuitization as a noun. It's an asset that is yours, that you can touch, you can access it, sometimes with restrictions, but at least it's there. Then if you take the action, so this is where we call it a verb, that you've taken the action of turning that money over to the insurance company saying, I no longer want access to this as a noun. I instead want you to replace that with a promise of payments over my life or over some agreed upon time. And I relinquish access to that lump sum noun amount that I had. So because that is a conversion, it's an action, we call the annuitized annuity a verb, although it's really, it's almost like a noun that has had a verb applied to it. That when we talk about the verb, it's the conversion or transformation of it from pre-annuitization to annuitized, which now makes that asset the property of the insurance company. And instead, you have got the promise of those income payments for the rest of your life. So that's why we call it the noun and the verb, because an annuity can be either one of those, pre-annuitization or post-annuitization.
Exactly. And most of you VGers who listen to this show have probably been taught or learned to despise annuities and you hate annuities. And that's fine. You have your own prerogative. If you listen to us long enough, you might start to understand where they might come into play, and that's not what we're going to rehash today. But when it comes to people who purchase an annuity, not everybody hates them and will purchase them. They like the noun annuity. They don't like the verb annuity. They don't like the fact, because they say the quote-unquote insurance company wins if they bought the verb annuity and pass away before receiving all their money back. Now, we spoke at length on earlier shows to get you to understand that's not the case. The insurance company's not winning. Everybody else in your insurance pool wins, not the insurance company. And it's part of the reason your payout, I don't want to say your yield, because when you buy a verb annuity, an annuity that has been annuitized, the money you receive, we may talk about it in general terms from a retirement planning perspective as income, but from an investment standpoint, it's a payout. It's a payout that represents a return of your principal, interest, and mortality credits. So from a retirement planning hat, I would call it income. From an investment hat, I would call it a payout percentage, not necessarily a yield like you would get on a bond. But anyways, people don't like the verb. for the biggest reason what, Chris? They give up access to what?
The lump sum dollars that were there. They just have to wait for those income payments to come in. And if they, for whatever reason, wanted to access a large lump sum amount, that's now gone. That's now out of their control, if you will.
Exactly. So let me talk about living benefit riders or living benefits. They're a benefit that will pay you when you have a noun, not a verb. Today we're talking about noun annuities. And a noun annuity is just a deferred annuity, not a deferred income annuity, which is a right. DIA, just a deferred annuity. A deferred annuity is every single freaking annuity out there is a deferred annuity. Technically speaking, even a single premium immediate annuity is a deferred annuity. Mm-hmm. A deferred annuity just simply says, I'm deferring the income. I'm going to keep it a noun. I'm going to defer the income. A single premium immediate annuity can defer the income for how long, Chris?
As much as 12 months.
As much as 12 months. Technically 13 months because the right. first month doesn't count.
Right.
So you still could defer it, technically speaking. So when I say every annuity is a deferred annuity, I'm really stretching the description there a bit, and I acknowledge that. But outside of single premium immediate annuities, every annuity is a deferred annuity because an annuity simply holds your money and the insurance company, built into the policy, will have a guaranteed mortality-driven payout grid, if you will, for annuitization built into that annuity. Annuitization is the verb where you'd say to the insurance company, I've owned this annuity, this noun. I put money in, and for X number of years, you have credited my annuity with interest or growth, if you will. Some of that interest might have been credited to you on a fixed basis where they're going to give you a set return every year, similar to a multi-year guaranteed annuity or MIGA. Some of it may be deferred interest tied to an index, like a fixed indexed annuity. Some might be what are called variable annuities, where you get to invest your dollars inside the annuity in what are called sub-accounts, which look like a mutual fund, talk like a mutual fund, but they're not a mutual fund. And now we have the kind of bastard child, I call it, between a one-night stand of a variable annuity and a fixed indexed annuity, the RILA annuity, registered indexed linked annuities, which is the insurance company's answer to buffered ETFs and structured notes, which are offered by banks. Structured notes are offered by banks. So those are all the annuities during the deferral phase that have the potential to grow. Listen to all the shows in June, and we get into these a little bit deeper. Now, here is the cynic in me coming out on why living benefits came about. Where, Chris, is most people's money?
Most people these days are in, you know, retirement accounts.
Right. IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, TSPs, things of that nature, folks. Right. So that's where most of the money was. When I first got into this industry 26 freaking years ago now, when I was just 15 years old, you find some humor in my age?
No, you're calling me old? I thought I was a little quieter than that. It kind of leaked out by accident.
Hey, in my mind, it was 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. All right. 26 years ago, folks. When I first got into this, there were no living benefits on annuities. The only benefit was a death benefit. Mm-hmm. If you died and during the deferral phase, your annuity happened to lose money, and you might be saying, gee, Jim, I thought annuities came with a principal guarantee. They do, except for variable annuities. Variable annuities have no principal guarantee. So if you died and the stock market just happened to be down and there was less money in the annuity than when you were alive and first put money in, the insurance company would make you whole. So that's a death benefit. And that was pretty much the only benefit you had for buying an annuity during the deferral phase. When you're not touching it during the deferral phase was a death benefit. Well, the regulators were getting ready. There was a lot of rumbling in the industry that the regulators were starting to look at these annuities as being totally unnecessary and being inappropriately sold to people who were being told to take their money that were in 401ks, move them to IRAs, and buy this variable annuity from this insurance agent or this registered rep, pay this massive commission to the agent, and there was no benefit for owning this annuity inside an IRA. The insurance industry would always say, hey, annuities get to grow tax deferred. Well, great. So your annuity grows tax deferred, but you're putting it into an account that already gets tax deferral because it's an IRA. The regulators were ready to come down on the industry and say there's no need for doing this. So the industry comes out with some enhanced death benefits. They improve the death benefits. And that only got so far. The death benefits would grow at a certain level, or they would step up every anniversary. If you put $100,000 in and on the first anniversary it was worth $120,000, let's say the variable annuity grew by 20%. I'm just making these numbers up. Grew by 20%. You have $120,000 in there now. That would become your new protected death benefit. And if you died at any point in the future where your annuity dropped below that value, so long as it dropped because of market fluctuations, not because you took withdrawals, if it was worth less, the death benefit would pay. That only went so far, though, Chris. Why is that? How come that wasn't too appealing to people?
Well, the key issue with a death benefit of any kind is something has to happen for you to get it, and that is you have to die. So a benefit that only happens then is not as appealing to people as you might think.
Exactly. So the insurance industry was saying, hey, this is still, it kind of placated the regulators a bit. We improved the death benefit with this growth potential, but it still wasn't causing annuities to be sold. Mm-hmm. People were still saying, okay, an enhanced death benefit, but not enough to get me to pay all the outrageous fees that these older annuities, and to a degree, these current annuities still have. So they came out with what are called living benefits. And what they wanted to do there, and what they said they would do there, is essentially, hey, while you're alive, we're going to pay you some income without you having to take this noun, this annuity that you can access at any time, especially after the penalty period's expired. During the penalty period, the liquidity of that annuity is greatly restricted because usually for the first 5, 7, or 10 years, you're going to pay a penalty if you take your money out of that annuity. But once the annuity's penalty period went away and it became liquid, people could access their annuity. Well, they wanted to say to those people, hey, how would you like to keep this noun a noun and still get an income benefit for life? Mm-hmm. And because you held this annuity past the penalty period, even if we're giving you an income benefit, you can close the deal off at any time and take whatever money has not been returned to you out of the annuity.
Mm-hmm. Overcoming one of the major hurdles that people were having trying to sell these annuities when people were hesitant to lock up their money and let the insurance company, quote, win.
Exactly. People are like, what if I need the money? Well, that's where living benefits came in. Now, the cynic in me is saying living benefits came in to entice people to still buy annuities inside tax-qualified retirement plans, retirement accounts, mainly IRAs, with an enticement beyond a death benefit, which really wasn't getting people to buy annuities. The living benefit changed everything. And the heyday of living benefits were in the early 2000s, 2005, 6, 7, and 8, to a degree maybe 9 and 10. That 5-6 year window is the great living benefit wars, we used to call them. Seriously. Because the companies were coming out with living benefits that defied any type of realism. They were just crazy beneficial. Now, you can't get them anymore, especially after the 08 market crash, when insurance companies realized, holy moly, a lot of these annuities have lost a lot of money, and we've promised these income benefits. We've got to kind of scale back the income benefit. I'm not going to get into the old benefits and how good they were, because you can't get them anymore. We're going to concentrate more kind of on conceptually how these living benefits work. I'll get deeper into it with some of the email questions we got where people have actually shared with me the annuity that they've been offered. And then I can pull how the income benefit works and they have questions on it. So I'll be able to drill a little bit deeper on future shows. But in essence, the insurance company, and I give them credit for creating these, even though the cynic in me says you're doing it just to be able to sell more annuities. But if it gets people to protect some of their dollars, some of their income throughout retirement with guarantees, I'm all for it. So what, in essence, is the living benefit rider? It's really been evolved. Living benefit riders first began with a guaranteed minimum accumulation benefit, where it really wasn't an income benefit at all. It was just, hey, rather than you having to wait until you die to get the death benefit, if you keep this annuity for a certain number of years, usually 10 years or more back then, if you kept your annuity for a certain number of years, irrespective of how the annuity performed, we're going to give you this minimum amount of money. And you could do a little bit of work because you have the beginning value, you have the ending value, you could see the growth rate that the insurance company was building into this. And it was kind of a way of saying, if you buy this annuity and for the next X number of years, again, it's usually 5, 7, or 10 years, if you don't earn much interest or if you have a variable annuity and the equity market doesn't do well, as long as you hold this annuity and take nothing out, at the end of that term, we're going to give you, you're going to be able to walk away with no less than this guaranteed minimum accumulation benefit. So that's how they first started. Then they evolved into what were called a guaranteed minimum income benefit. And the key word there is income. Wherever you see the word income in an annuity, eventually it's telling you this annuity will become a verb. If you see the word income, single premium immediate, well, some people call it single premium income annuity. It's really I is immediate. But deferred, DIA, deferred income annuity, is different than a deferred annuity because it has that word income. It means that annuity, a deferred income annuity, is a verb. You've given up your money. The living benefit rider of a guaranteed minimum income benefit, GMIB, they're generally not offered anymore. A few companies are still offering them, but they kind of went the way of the dodo bird because people eventually realized it would work similar to the insurance company would say, as long as you hold this annuity for X number of years, we guarantee you will be able to start withdrawing out of your annuity and coming from your own pool of money. We guarantee as long as you take out no more than a certain amount that we're going to tell you, if you die and there's, excuse me, not if you die, if you live long enough and there's no dollars left, we're going to continue to pay you those dollars. But they started with what was called a GMIB, telling you one other thing. After a certain number of years, and it could be different for every annuity, if there's money still left in your annuity, it hasn't reached zero yet, and we're not giving you any of our money, you have to give up that money.
Right.
You'll get you got choice to make. They're not going to force you out, but they would say to you, hey, you've got, let's just say you got $30,000 left in it, and you're getting $12,000 a year, making these numbers up. You have $30,000 left and you're getting $12,000 a year. They're going to contact you and say, under a GMIB, hey, beginning next year, you got a choice. Do you want $12,000 a year forever or do you want your $30,000? You can't have both. Can't have your cake and eat it too. Now, with those numbers, that was a bad example. Pretty much anybody's going to take the $12,000 a year unless you have less than a year to live or less than 2 years to live. You're going to say, no, keep giving me the $12,000 a year. But for a lot of people, the difference was huge. It might be $200,000 in there or $12,000 a year. And now people were being forced to make a decision. And they didn't want that. They didn't want, again, they want to try to keep this as a noun, not a verb. So the insurance companies said, guaranteed minimum income benefits, nice, they kind of work. But let's go one step further. Let's not force this to become a verb. Let's keep it a noun. So they created guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefits, GMWB. Mm-hmm. And they'll sometimes go by GLWB, guaranteed lifetime withdrawal benefits. Tomato, tomato. They're essentially the same. On those, the insurance company, when you bought it, and these are the riders that exist today. These are the income, living benefit income riders that exist today. The majority of them are guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefits or guaranteed lifetime withdrawal benefits, where they will lay out to you at the start, contractually, in your annuity, how much money you will receive at any point in the future. If they don't give you an exact dollar amount, they will at minimum give you an exact formula that they will use to set the income. So depending on how the benefit rider is structured, some will actually give you the dollar amount. If you put in $100,000 today, we guarantee, I'm going to make this up, in 12 years, you will get no less than $14,000. Again, making this number up. There's others that might say, if you put in $100,000 today, we guarantee in 14 years, you will be able to withdraw 7.63% of the higher of the value of your annuity or the income base. And I'll explain shortly what the income base is. So that is one that gives you more of a formula, not necessarily how much you're going to get. They will give you a formula. But even the ones that give you a formula, by law, have to show you the least amount of income, the worst case scenario, what you would get. So even with one of those living benefit riders that give you just a formula, inside the illustration, you will at least be able to see the worst case scenario, how much you're going to get. You can only do better. You're never going to know exactly what you're going to get in these formula-driven ones, but you will know the minimum amount you're going to get and the formula that they're going to use to establish how much income you're going to get. Then you guys, especially those of you who are good with Excel, can program that formula into Excel and various growth rates of the annuity minus the fees they're taking out of the annuity and come up with a whole range of potential income amounts you're going to get. When we work with people who choose this type of annuity over the type of annuity Chris and I favor, which is a single premium immediate annuity. But if we work with someone who, for one reason or another, wants this noun, not a verb, we will always have to key in off of what, Chris? Would we key in on the worst case scenario number? Or are we going to try to guess what they might get as we figure out how much money they have to put into this annuity for the income benefit?
Yeah, our preference is to key in on the guaranteed amount so that we can kind of, you know, plan for the worst, hope for the best kind of an approach. So if a lot of people, I will say, who are interested in a new income from an annuity are those who are trying to protect something. They're trying to, where we look at it is annuities are a form of secure income, and that secure income is doing one important job in your retirement plan, and that is to provide longevity protection. It'll keep paying you forever, as long as you're alive. So if you're kind of that mindset, you're probably also of the mindset of, at least with those dollars you're contemplating committing to this annuity, conservative, right? So it makes sense to look at or focus upon the guarantees in the contract and not the what could possibly happen if things go well scenario.
Exactly. So my tip to you, if you are contemplating one of these, or more likely, if you're listening to this podcast, you're a VG-er, Vanguard engineer type, and you're probably never going to buy an annuity. Or if you do, you're going to be smart enough to get a single premium immediate annuity. But if you do run across someone contemplating these annuities, they're going to receive from the insurance company, or more likely than not, the agent trying to sell this annuity, they're going to receive what is called a hypothetical illustration. That hypothetical, if you took the hypothetical illustration and put it next to a roll of, printed it, and put that stack of papers next to a roll of toilet paper, the roll of toilet paper has more positive utility than the stack of papers for that hypothetical illustration. Because the hypothetical illustration is exactly that. Hypothetical is never going to happen. But buried in that hypothetical illustration, on some page, by law, is the worst case scenario. That is what the person should be looking at. Nothing else. Because that's the least amount of income you can get. And if that least amount of income in that hypothetical, that's why they call it a hypothetical illustration. All throughout the damn hypothetical illustration, it tells you, this is hypothetical, don't rely on it. There's no guarantee you're going to get this. But by law, they have to have that worst case scenario page. A lot of agents, I won't say most, I'll just say a lot, kind of ignore that page. I think that's BS.
That page is not very impressive compared to the hypothetical.
No, not at all. The hypothetical is great. But you need to make sure, if someone's coming to you and saying, hey, I got some questions. What does it really work this way? What should I do? Just figure out where this hype, not the hypothetical, figure out the worst case scenario page. And just say, hey, is this enough income? You're going to defer this for 10 years. And yeah, you're looking at what you hypothetically might get. But there's no guarantee that's going to happen at all. But is the income listed on this page, this is the minimum, this is the guaranteed worst case scenario page. Is this enough income? If they say no, that's not even close. Well, there's your answer. This annuity, at least as structured, might not meet their needs. They may have to put more money in to get that absolute worst case scenario page to equal the amount of income they need. What I despise about these living benefit riders is they're sold by hypothetical illustrations that, again, have less utility than a roll of toilet paper. Okay, so back to the living benefit rider. Contractually, that worst case page is what you can get. You can only get better from there. how much you get pretty much falls between that worst case page and the best case page. How are they going to give you this income? Well, again, they're either going to give you a formula or they're already going to tell you a dollar amount. Most are going to be based on a formula. And it's usually a withdrawal percent based on your age, when you buy it, when you turn the income on, and how many years went by between when you bought it and when you turned the income on. So they get complicated. It's not straightforward. So again, if you're working with someone who's considering this, make sure the agent or the registered rep or the investment advisor representative, if this is a fee-based annuity, make sure they truly walk you through how this living benefit works and how to figure out what you're going to earn. But in essence, they're going to give you a withdrawal percentage. Most of them, I'm talking about 95% of them, will just tell you every year, based on the age you were when you bought this, if you defer turning the income on for 5 years, we're going to give you this much as a withdrawal percentage. We're going to let you withdraw 6.3%. I'm making these numbers up. If you wait 10 years, you're going to be able to withdraw 7.9%. If you wait 15 years, you're going to be able to withdraw 11.8%. They'll actually tell you, the vast majority of them tell you how much you can withdraw. But Chris, what are you going to get? Let's just say your withdrawal percent is 7.5%. 7.5% of what? What account? What are they going to look at?
Well, they're going to look at what we call your pretend account, your account that is setting up what's called the income base. And so that can be, you know, a complex thing going on depending on the features of the annuity, how much you're actually being credited with, etc. And so it isn't directly tied to, for instance, the noun, the amount that you could have access to as a lump sum. So that adds another element of confusion for people.
Exactly. And that's where you often see these annuities advertised. And you unfortunately hear a lot of ads on TV and the radio. I listen to a lot of talk radio. And at least on talk radio, there's a ton of freaking ads for these stupid things. I won't call them stupid. Some are nice. I can see. But you often hear the announcer say something to the effect of, you know, if you open this, and they never tell you it's an annuity. They just tell you, if you open up this product, and at the end of the commercial, they'll say guarantees are based on the claims-paying ability of issuing insurance companies, and now you know they're talking about annuities. But you might hear something to the effect of, how would you like a guaranteed 10.8% growth rate for income for the next 10 years before you retire? You'll hear something like that. Yeah.
Which makes, you know, and they're doing this intentionally, so it sounds like you're earning what people would think of as an investment rate of return equal to that number. And it's a completely different thing. It is not exactly the same. It is not the same. But it sucks people in, and they found that it's successful. It's effective in their marketing. And it's not a lie. It's just confusing enough that people draw the wrong conclusion and attribute to it far more positivity than they otherwise would if they fully understood it.
As the key word in that sentence I just said was what, Chris?
The income benefit, the income.
Income.
Growth.
Because you'll hear it advertised that way. And again, let's just assume 10.8. Again, I'm making this up. But again, you would hear something encouraging you. You know, call us today. We have a special. We have access to products that most advisors don't. And we can guarantee that you will get a 10.8% growth on your retirement income now and for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Most people are going to think, oh, God, 10.8 guaranteed, and you can never lose. Oh, my Lord. and they call, but they don't pick up on that word income.
Right.
Because here's the thing. The majority of these products, again, are going to give you a formula. And the formula is going to be based on one of two account, one of two numbers. I'd rather word it that way. One number is the actual account balance of your annuity. How much money you put in, plus any interest you earned on those dollars, minus any fees. These living benefit rider annuities have fees, quite a lot of fees, as I'll show on a couple of questions that I'm going to answer in the future. But you also have that mystical, magical account that we call the pretend account. The industry calls it the benefit base. Mm-hmm. That gets confusing as hell. Most people don't know what that is. Call it what it is. It's a pretend account. You can't touch it. You can't spend it. You can't liquidate it. It's meaningless. It's pretend. But the pretend account, in my hypothetical example, is what's going to grow at 10.8%. But in my hypothetical example, 10 years. At the end of that 10-year period, or sooner if the annuity allows it, some will allow you to turn the living benefit income rider on earlier, and if you turn it on earlier, you get less. But if you wait 10 years, and what did I say the withdrawal benefit was? I can't remember, 7.5, I think, I forget.
Yeah, it was something like that.
If the withdrawal benefit after 10 years is 7.5%, you will get 7.5% of the higher of the pretend account or the actual account balance of the annuity, whichever grew to more. 99 out of 100 times, if not 100 out of 100 times, Chris, which is going to be higher, the pretend account or the actual account?
The pretend account is almost always going to be higher.
Exactly. They're structured that way. Why? Why would an insurance company structure it where the pretend account is going to be higher than your actual account, Chris? Why do you think they would want to do that?
To give people the false impression that they've got more money in there than they really do, showing the, you know, results of their 10% per year promised growth or, you know, whatever that they had promised them. It just looks really appealing. But it isn't, they aren't dollars you can take out. They're just a number upon which the benefit is based. That's why they call it the benefit base or income base. It's just a number as part of the formula. Now, I'll point out here immediately, just so you know, and some of you who, you know, have a feel for these annuities won't be surprised by this, that those that have very generous growth on the pretend accounts, how they offset that, how they, quote, afford to do that with you, is they then offer relatively low income percentages of that benefit base. Those two numbers are related because it's those two numbers and your age that determine how much you're going to receive. And so they can play with the numbers. They can make it look really appealing, have this big benefit base only to, for people to realize, oh my gosh, I'm only getting 4.5% of that or 5% of it. Yeah, the number's much bigger than my real account, my, you know, pretend account is what we call it. Oh my gosh, look how much bigger it is. It's 40 or 50 or 60% larger. I did so well in this annuity, but the income benefit is a percentage payout of that that offsets that growth. It offsets it. It counteracts it, if you will. And it's just proof that it's misunderstanding of the formula and how these numbers work that oftentimes get people to fall into being more attracted to these than they otherwise should be.
So years ago, folks, when I used to work for a company called Waddell & Reed, and I know for years I never mentioned who I first started working for 26 years ago, but I think last year, the year before, Waddell & Reed doesn't exist anymore. They were bought out and whatever. So I'll mention them now. They told us once this, and I think I've shared this. We had to go down to Denver. I was up in Fort Collins. We had to go down to Denver and listen to the rah-rah-rah sales pitch from Waddell & Reed higher-ups. And I'll always remember this statistic. I have no idea if the guy doing the presentation made this up or not, but he told us 15% of society is never going to plan for their retirement or investments, so don't even waste your time with them. 15%, a different 15% of American society, do their own investment management, and they're never going to pay your fees. Don't even try to work with them. But 70% of the public don't know anything about finance, and those are the ones that you want to try to get as clients because they're the ones you can convince need you. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what it was. I always remember that 70-15-15. With these products, folks, you all are that 15% do-it-yourself. And I don't know if that's an accurate number. I think now it would probably be even higher. Maybe it was accurate 26 years ago. But you guys are the ones, they're not trying to get, insurance companies know, they're not going to trick you. You're going to be able to sit there and read right through this hocus-pocus stuff, especially when you see living benefit riders that have for a growth rate. We reviewed one recently with a 9.5% growth rate guaranteed for 12 years on the pretend account. The problem is the withdrawal benefit was nothing.
Right.
They're all swimming in the same pond. One insurance company can't offer something that another insurance company can't. So living benefit riders, though, are a wonderful way for insurance companies to create a cool little lure, like you're a fish. We've talked about this before. And if you have a fish lure, fishing lure with a lot of bells and whistles and spinners and noisemakers and beads and feathers and all that stuff going by your regular stupid fish, a fish is going to run out and grab that thing because it's too great to ignore. But there's always that smart fish in the pond that's like, nah, I've seen that 100 times over. That's fate. Don't go eat that. They're not trying to get those people. They're not trying to get you. They're trying to get the other 70%, according to Waddell and Reed, of people who don't understand finance, and they're the ones that we should be going for. And I took his I wish I could have recorded it. Back then, there was no pocket recorders like we have today. Because, again, to the best of my memory, this is 26-plus years ago now, he was pretty much saying, you can pull the wool over their eyes. You can get them to pay. Back then, people had to pay a 5.75% upfront A-share commission on anything Waddell and Reed was selling. And yeah, you can pretty much convince those people. And that's kind of what you see with a lot of these living benefit riders. The sizzle is better than the, the steak isn't worth the sizzle's not worth the, help me out here, Chris. The sizzle's not worth the steak, right? The steak is sizzling more than it's worth?
No, it's the phrase is, it's all sizzle and no steak.
Ah, I knew that. I was testing you.
Yeah. That's a famous Peter Lynch from your neck of the woods saying. Ah. Peter Lynch used to say that all the time.
Well, these products for a lot of times are more sizzle than steak, or the sizzle's not worth the steak. Or the steak's not worth the sizzle. Whatever the hell it was, I can't remember. Anyways, the point is, folks, they're not trying to get you. They're trying to get the people that are easily tricked into thinking they're getting something that they're really not. Now, I'm being rather harsh on the industry, but it deserves it because many of these income benefits aren't worth it. When you sit there and truly start drilling in. And I'll give you guys a little secret. Remember I said every illustration is a hypothetical. And it's not, again, print it out, put it next to toilet paper. The toilet paper has more utility than these printed pages. Go to the page that every hypothetical illustration has to have by law. The worst case scenario page.
Yeah, they don't call it that. They don't use the wording, so you're not going to find that on there. It's going to be the page with the guarantees on it. So the guaranteed instead of the you know, it's a variety of words they use for the other hypotheticals, but there's going to be one that talks about guarantees.
If you look on that page, then they're all laid out differently, but they will start to show you the pretend account, and they'll show you your account balance. Well, the worst case scenario, especially if the base annuity is a fixed indexed annuity, which, again, there's no scientific measure behind this, but 80, 85-plus percent of all annuities written with living benefit riders now are fixed indexed annuities, and RILAs are catching up. But anyways, the worst you can get with a fixed indexed annuity, because zero is your hero, is zero every year. What would you do if you got zero every year? What's great about that page is you will start to see the account balance actually dropping. Chris, if zero is your hero, and this is the deferral phase, how is the account balance going down on this page?
One word, fees.
There you go, folks. They have to reflect the fees on that page. And when you can't hide the fees in these hypothetical growth rates that they're pulling out of their you-know-what, they can't hide it in these hypothetical growth rates anymore. They're showing the account balance not growing at all. Yet it drops. Why is it dropping? Fees. Not the fees you think of. Not the fees that are quote-unquote baked in to a fixed indexed annuity. Those are not being displayed to you, even on this mystical, magical page that I'm describing. The fees that are being shown on this page are the fees of the income rider. That's what's being displayed on this page. Every income rider, every living benefit income rider has a fee associated with it. Now, there is some, I said every, put an asterisk next to that word every. There's a couple of insurance products that are living benefit riders where that rider fee, of which I just described, is actually baked into the product, and you still don't see it. And they're not common, and I don't want to name the insurance companies that offer them, because I'm not quite sure they still offer them, but there are two that come to mind, very popular insurance companies if I named them. They have some fixed indexed annuities with a living benefit rider where the fee is baked into the product. But the vast majority don't bake that rider fee in. It's a separate fee. And here's the dirty, maybe Chris knows the answer to this. We'll try. He's been doing good. Chris, I'm going to throw this one at you. If you don't get it, that's okay. But what's the dirty little secret of a rider fee? Let's just say the rider fee, folks, generally is between 75 basis points or 0.75% and 1.5%. It's a big window, but most fall in that realm. Let's just say this insurance company, this hypothetical company, charges 1%. So you might hear it explained to you, listener, as, and the fee for this income benefit is 1%. 1% of what, Chris?
I do know this dirty little secret. It's 1% of the pretend account, not of your actual account, which if it's dropping or not performing well, that 1%, as that pretend account grows, you know, in the background, we'll call it, because it's not real money that you can take out, your fee is going up. The fee gets reduced or reduces your actual account, but it's at an increasing percent over time as that pretend account grows faster than the actual account. So again, they're not lying. It is 1%, but 1% of what? Of this pretend account number that is based on nothing financial, but rather a formula promise that the insurance company has made to you. So that's the dirty little secret on the fee.
So these annuities can often have high fees. Mm-hmm. Now, let me say, because I've said this before, I own a, not one of these annuities, but I do own an annuity with a living benefit rider, but it's a variable annuity chassis, not a fixed income annuity chassis. And I bought it in 2008 during the height of the living benefit income wars. It's inside a Roth IRA, so it's going to generate me some lifetime stream of tax-free guaranteed income. I've shared openly on this podcast, I have that product, and I feel it's important to mention that. And going into this purchase, and I reviewed it with Chris at the time, and he was like, you'd be crazy, Jim. This is a good deal. I don't know how they're offering this. Well, neither did I, and the insurance company in question stopped offering that annuity after a certain number of months, and you couldn't get it. But anyways, my point is, my all-in fee on this, folks, is well over 3%. I don't care. I bought this. The fee is technically a red herring.
Right.
I knew going in what the fee was. I knew it was high. But I knew I bought that product for the income benefit. And every year that I delay the income benefit, my income goes up by a guaranteed amount. I'm not going to share what that is. Similar to that deferral period or delay period for Social Security, but my delay period on this annuity goes till I die if I want it to go that long. So every year I wait, I know the following year I'm going to get a set percentage of more guaranteed income. I knew exactly how much I was going to get day one, and I knew every year I delayed it went up 7%. So to me, my fee, which is outrageous, is a red herring because I did not buy this product to grow an account balance. If I didn't want income, I would have never bought this, and neither should you or anyone you're trying to help. If they don't need the income, don't buy the product.
Yeah, because otherwise you're at minimum, you're paying for something that you aren't going to use, the income. You're paying for a benefit. If your intention isn't to turn on that benefit or use it, you're paying for something you're not going to use. So at face value, it already starts to fall apart.
Correct. So the fee, and I will, because you will hear some very intelligent people in our industry, and I won't name who, you might hear them around, but names that you probably would recognize, talking very favorable about living benefit riders and trying to explain and justify the high fees by simply saying, similar to what I did, the high fee doesn't really matter. It's not a fee. I've heard a very well-respected person say recently, it's not a fee. It's the cost of insurance. It's the cost of your protection. And he or she, I'm not going to name the sex of this person or identify the sex of this person, he or she might have been right. It's technically the cost of insurance. That's what the rider fee goes for. The rider fee goes to cover the cost of insurance. But it comes from you. It comes from your account balance. It drops your account balance. Remember, these annuities are marketed as a way for you to have a noun with the benefit of a verb. So they entice you with, you can get your account balance at any time. You, after the penalty period, you can get your account balance at any time. You can call the deal off. And if you live long enough and you get all your money back and your account balance reaches zero, we're going to keep paying you from our pocket. None of that is wrong, except you have to factor the fee in. And we'll dive deeper into this on some of the email questions we got. But there was one question that I got when I sat there and figured out the fee. And I'm going to walk you all through it. During the deferral phase, it was going to cost this person, I don't know if they're going to move forward with it or not, it was going to, and these numbers are coming off the top of my head, they might not be exact when I actually get to describing this, but it was about $240,000 was going to be the fee coming out of their account during the deferral phase. And I figured that out by going to the Mystical Magical page, where I could clearly see the year that income begins, their pretend account was through the roof. But if this fixed indexed annuity earned zero every year, zero is your hero, they were going to have on the guaranteed page, they were going to put $1 million in, they were going to have about $240,000 less inside the annuity. Simple math, Chris. That's the fee.
Yep.
Now, if this person wanted the income benefit and were being told, though, hey, you can call the deal off and get your money out at any time, over the first, and I think the deferral phase for them was 10 years, over that 10-year period, they were going to be down $240,000. That could have been $231,000. I wish I knew the exact number. It wasn't more than $250,000, I don't think. But then, as income started coming out, the fee, by then, because the fee was 1.1% of the pretend account, and the pretend account was going to be worth more than $3 million by time they turned it on. That's how much they were growing this pretend account. But that's not real money. 1.1% of $3 million. The fee was still coming out at about $35,000, $36,000 a year, was still coming out of their actual account balance. That by time, again, it's all on that mystical, magical, worst-case scenario page, the account balance reached zero. I forget how many years after the income began, but it was going to be about another hundred and something thousand. I forget off the top of my head. Another $116,000, another $130,000. I'll have the exact numbers when we talk about this. Of additional fees, Chris, coming out before the account balance reached zero. So this was going to cost the person over $300,000+. I forget the exact number, $340,000 to $70,000, somewhere around there. It was all laid out on that mystical, magical page. But if the income benefit is what you want, you can see the cost. Is that 300 something thousand worth it? I personally didn't think it was. But the way they were thinking of using this product, I could concede, yeah, it could be actually a pretty good thing. Because I felt this income benefit, as we reviewed it, was still had the potential to pay more than a single premium immediate annuity would pay them.
Mm-hmm. And in that case, yeah, you compare it to that.
Correct.
If you're focused just on the income, then the quote fees are really irrelevant, because if you think of it like a SPIA, you paid fees there. You paid the premium to buy the SPIA. That was a cost that you bore, right? So the cost of the fixed index annuity or whatever it was, whatever chassis was built on with this income benefit on it, if the numbers play out and look attractive to you beyond the SPIA, then your cost was just the premium, you know, the money that you put into that annuity. What they did with it at the insurance company becomes irrelevant. If what you're truly focused on is the income benefit itself.
The income. Yep. And that's what I tried to get them to understand. I says, look, I'm just showing you what you're going to pay.
Yeah.
But I think it's a red herring. Because the amount they're going to guarantee you in 10 years, I can't say for certain you could do better with a single premium immediate annuity in 10 years. Yeah. However, and this will start to make sense more when we go over this. If I looked at it individually, because it was a husband and wife, the husband had a better chance of doing better than the wife, because women live longer. So I explained to them, this will make more sense, and I'll try to teach you guys how to evaluate this. And as a joint life, it was kind of a toss-up. But the husband, because he's a male, if he got it as a single life, I think he had a better chance of not buying this annuity, putting the dollars aside and buying a single premium immediate annuity in 10 years, rather than putting the money inside this annuity and taking the income in 10 years after paying a huge amount of fee. So I know I'm going in a direction that is hard for you guys to follow. When I start talking about these, because I got several questions, as I start talking about some of these questions and what I've found as I dug deeper in, I'm going to try to teach you guys how to look, because you might be saying, oh God, why would anybody buy something that's going to cost them 300 something thousand? I can't remember the exact number it came up to. Why? Well, the income benefit. If you truly like and need and want the income benefit, it might be worth it for you to say, yeah, it's worth me paying this much to get this income benefit that I can't get anywhere else. So I know I sound very negative on living benefit riders, and for the most part, I am. I still think a single premium immediate annuity is the better option, especially the way Chris and I favor. Put your money aside, invest it, keep it there, and buy the annuity in the future. Your job, the younger you, your job is to make sure the older you has the money to buy an annuity if and when they need it. And because we don't know 10 years from now, 12 years from now, 8 years from now, if you truly are going to need this income or not, we like to leave the money liquid and safe, not necessarily, well, yeah, you can keep it safe. You can put it in very low risk investments if you want, but very liquid, very accessible, and allow the older you to decide if they need the lifetime income. Because that's a big risk, even with an income benefit rider, especially one that's going to take several hundred thousand dollars of fees out of you. You don't have to turn the income benefit on in 10 years, but then you would have paid $230,000 or $240,000 of fees in 10 years. That's a hell of a lot of money to pay and then not need the income or want the income, because you either got an inheritance and you don't need the income, or sadly, you have a shorter life expectancy, you don't need the income. You just paid $250,000 in this particular product for nothing. That's a tough pill to swallow. Mm-hmm. But some people do like, and they are okay with it. And that's why you see a lot of talking heads in our industry saying, hey, this truly isn't a fee. It's the cost of the insurance protection. And they're right to an extent. But you can call it a cost or you can call it a fee. It still is going to come out of your account balance on these living benefit riders. You guys love to geek out on this. Y'all should just go to an insurance agent and pretend you truly do want one of these products and get all the disclosure documents, get that hypothetical illustration, ask for a copy of a policy, and then just take it home and start seeing how it really works and writing spreadsheets to reflect all that. I think you guys would geek out on it. Some, the fees are indefensible. And at first, when I analyzed this annuity on the email, I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. But then when I started looking, I was like, hey, I think that income benefit isn't that bad, depending on which way you look at it. And I wasn't 100% convinced. I wouldn't use it, but if somebody came to me, an actual client of ours, I don't think I would try to have talked them out of it. I wouldn't have talked them into it, but I wouldn't necessarily talk them out of it. I would just give them the information. Hey, you know, this is going to cost you, when all is said and done, 300 something thousand is right here on this page. When your account balance reaches zero, you paid 340, 50, 60,000, whatever it was, I can't remember. If you're okay with that, and this is the income benefit you want, I'm fine with it. So even though I talk negative or with a jaundiced eye on these, because I still think ultimately the insurance companies are trying to create these lures that just trick people into buying them. Not you all, the 70% that Waddell and Reed was talking about. Even though I still feel that way, I'm smart enough to realize some of these, you got to put that bias aside and look at this for what it is. And some people truly want the ability to call the deal off, that liquidity, irrespective of what it costs, and they just want to take care of it now, not later. And as long as the income benefit later remains competitive to what an SPIA, and we have to base it off of a single premium immediate annuity today. We don't know in 10 years you could get more or less. We have to be cognizant of that fact. Sometimes people, Chris, will say, no, I want the surety. Thank you for showing me the cost. Thank you for showing me how this pretend account works. Thank you for explaining this product. But I still feel more comfortable having a bird in the hand than two in the bush in the future. And I want to do this now. So even though I spent a lot of time talking about these with definite some cynicism in my voice, it's because I know the industry. And maybe you wouldn't buy one, but many people would. And your job, being on the vanguard, I call you guys the vanguard, is to understand. And when I dive into actual examples from email questions, you'll start to understand, and these are probably more EDU shows than Q&A shows, but when I start walking through and showing you and the numbers that I'm seeing in the illustrations and the models and what the listener shared with me they're trying to do, you might start to realize that, hey, this might be worth purchasing. I can't say it's going to happen all the time, but it might be worth purchasing. Because some of these living benefit riders, as expensive as they are, might pay more than a single premium immediate annuity. And for some people, even though Chris and I don't necessarily agree with it, would rather take care of that today than have the older them take care of it in 5, 7, 10 years from now. So anyways, I just want everyone to understand generally how these work, and to recognize I might have been harsh on them and the cynicism on them, and I don't rule them out right away. I always look at the worst case scenario page, and I try to compare it to what a single premium immediate annuity today would get them if they were the age they're going to be in 5, 7, or 10, or 12, or however many years in the future. That's the key. What today, if this is what you're going to get, if this is the guaranteed minimum income you're going to get in, say, when you're 83, what would it cost in a SPIA today to get that? And it allows you to start to see, hey, that annuity is definitely not worth it. A SPIA is better. Oh, my God, that annuity compared to a SPIA today, hey, it's not that bad. And then maybe the person truly would want it.
Right.
Anyways, hopefully you get a little better idea of these products when I actually dive into some of these email questions and show you guys how to analyze that mystical, magical page of the worst case scenario. You'll start to be able to figure out, wow, this annuity stinks, or this one could actually be okay. Does that make sense, Chris?
Yeah, look forward to it. So, we'll start to see some of those emails come up in some shows in the not-too-distant future. We wanted to do this show first, give people kind of a fundamental or foundational understanding of these living benefits, and then we can get into answering questions about it, and you'll have a lot better context for these questions as we tackle them over the coming, I would suspect, weeks. As these come up, we're not going to do a whole show just of these. It's not Annuity Awareness Month anymore, but we'll sprinkle these out, as appropriate and get into these. They're pretty interesting. because as you might imagine, with all the different insurance companies in the world, all their different offerings, there's all different variations in the way this formula works on these annuities, these unique benefits that we've been talking about today. So be interesting once we get to those. So I want to thank everybody for listening. Jim, you have a nice evening with your family. I think you're going to do dinner with your family. Probably got a skedaddle to get off on that. Get off to do that. And then everybody else, if you have a question, especially if you have a living benefits question, now would be the time to send it in for a future show where we're going to handle these. Email them directly to Jim, the question. Jim@jimhelps.com is the email. That's Jim, HELPS.com. And put in the subject line that it's a question for the podcast, and then maybe the word living benefits in there, if that's what it is. If it's a different topic, you know, put a couple words just to the topic there as well. But the topic of the day being living benefits on annuities, this would be a good time to send those in. I know Jim already has some, but we're always interested in some fresh ones just to add to the pool that we can bring forth to everybody on the show here.
And I can't say for certain I'm going to be able to analyze every single living benefit writer. I've got 3 or 4 questions already. And, I mean, you can still send them in, and I might be able to analyze it, but I can't do every single one.
No. Well, we'll probably cherry pick the most interesting ones, the most educational ones, because that's the whole point of the show that we do here is trying to educate everyone, share info about some areas of retirement planning that you may not be aware of even, or particularly have in-depth knowledge about them. We try to do our best to share what we've learned over time. And you listening and us doing this makes the podcast world go round. So we appreciate everybody. Everybody take care, stay safe, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.